Welcome to the Entrepreneurs in Bali podcast, your digital escape into the lives of the entrepreneurs living in Bali. I am Daniel Heisoman, and each week we dive into the art of living freely, working remotely, and discovering what it takes to get there. Join us as we explore the secrets to financial freedom, share tips on navigating the digital nomad lifestyle, and hear from nomads who've made Bali their temporary or permanent home. From what they do, how they do it, and how they got into it, we are covering it all. Whether you're here for the strategies, the secrets, or listening for the enjoyment of each entrepreneur story, Entrepreneurs in Bali is your guide to thriving in this island paradise. So hit the follow button, download, and get yourself a coconut so that we can kick off this next entrepreneur's journey together. Welcome to the podcast. This is episode number 3.
All right.
And just to start things off, I would like you to just tell the viewers or listeners we are on both YouTube as videos and on all major platforms as like to be able to listen to it. So on Spotify and all other big platforms. So whether you're listening or watching this podcast, welcome. And today we have a special guest. He has lots of experience in the e-commerce, and he will be telling us a lot more about that with some expert experience and skills and some tips and tricks, maybe. If we're lucky, we'll see. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Daniel, for having me. My name is Mino. I'm from Italy. At the moment, we both live in Bali. And to give a little introduction on myself, I would say that, I lived in China many years. I moved to China in 2014. For me, it was a big adventure because I studied philosophy. It had nothing to do with what I do now. But something new happened. I wanted something new. And little by little, I get into e-commerce. I work for a Chinese company, French company. I started my own company, then another Chinese company I keep working with. And then last year, I started again my business with a business partner. And last year was the last year in China. I decided to move, to change, to start a new chapter of my life. And I've been in Bali for like around 4 months. And that's myself. I move a lot, I guess.
Nice. When in last year was this? Was this close to the end or the beginning?
It was, I think, it was July.
Okay, so about the middle.
Yes, I mean, I went back to China. It was November 2022.
Yeah.
They still had a lot of COVID restrictions.
Oh, yeah.
And that was crazy because I had to fly from Amsterdam to Guangzhou. And it was a direct flight, very expensive, very expensive. Sure. And then I had like 8 days quarantine.
Yeah.
And then I experienced China with all those rules that were like quite, I would say, a bit different than what we experienced somewhere else or in Bali, from what I understand. And then little by little, like they changed, they opened. But I spent the last year in China developing our product for the new project.
Yeah.
And our expertise, my expertise is like, it's more product developing. We do physical products. We've been selling on Amazon for many, many years in Europe, US, Canada. We tried a bit Japan, but it didn't work out very well. And so what I've been doing is like, okay, how can I get a product that people like? How can I find something that my clients would enjoy, would help their lives? And we've been studying a lot how to basically get as much feedback as possible from them and test and reiterate. You get a feedback and then you change maybe the shape of the product, maybe you change something in the product itself. We don't do anything very, very creative in the sense we don't create a new product that's never been on the market. That's not our thing. What we do is like, okay, we see a niche. And in that niche, we see, okay, is there some space for us? And we've been doing wired earbuds.
Yes.
Like for many earphones, I think they say in UK. Like for many, many years. Actually, with the company I work with still, we are the number one sellers in the US and Europe, North America and Europe, if you consider small brands. So if you compete with Apple or Sony, we're not there, but considering all like the other guys at the our level, we sell more than everybody else. And yeah, we're pretty good at factory and the quality because, okay, let's say that we're a bit of Chinese, so that gives us an advantage, you know, not just you buy something on Alibaba, but you actually create our own design, our own stuff. Did you check every single process. Oh, sorry.
No? Did you ever start by like doing other products, like existing ones, or did you start from the get-go by creating your own? Because I know there's quite a big market. It's like they call it drop shipping, where they basically sell somebody else's product. Did you just go straight into creating your own, or?
Yeah, we did that. I mean, with the Chinese company, with my friends, we started from the get-on. Like, okay, we want to get our own design. But before that, before I started working with them, I was making my own stuff, my own Amazon store, and I was already selling, like, earbuds. And we knew that it was a good niche everywhere. Now it's, like, 2024. Everybody has AirPods or, like, Bluetooth stuff. But back in the days, a few years ago, like... while earbuds was something pretty cool and has to do with fashion. So we knew there was a big demand. And at the beginning, we just said, okay, you know what? Let's find an OEM. Let's find something that sounds good, that looks good, and let's just sell it with our brand.
Yeah.
After that, we got a bit better and said, look, we need to come up with a design that is a little sleek. Because in this niche, what you want to compete with is like is the design. But these earbuds are still something that is related to I wouldn't say fashion per se, but it's related to the way you want to show yourself to the others. Like, okay, I have like the AirPods. It gives an idea of what I'm doing and what I'm, what I want to, you know, what kind of brand I like. Maybe you have like dark clothes. You want dark earbuds. You want something for the office. You want something more professional. So you play with the design. That's what we're good at.
Okay, nice. The product that you have now, does it play music or is it just like protection plugs?
In the Chinese company is for music, in the new project that I'm the co-founder, it's basically earplugs. It's something that you wear, it's a piece of special silicone. They say it's called skin graded, so it's something like for your ears. There are no BPAs, there's nothing like special silicone, very comfortable. And there are no hardware, no chips, no speakers, nothing.
So it's just like noise cancelling kind of.
Technically, it's called noise isolating. Cancelling is active. So it's passive noise isolation or cancelling is.
Would you say it's something that would go for like the like construction things, or is it more just for like the person that's in a city that wants some peace and quiet?
And we have like different target audiences, different buyer personas. The construction one is one of them. It's not exactly our typical customer. For that, you would use foam plugs, foam earplugs, the ones you find at the drugstore. What we do is like they're reusable and they're made of silicone. So what happens is that you can use them every day. It gives you more about like comfort, and it's a different kind of effect regarding noise isolation. It's like it doesn't block completely the noise, it muffles it in a way that all the high frequencies, the one that gives you stress or makes you uncomfortable, are reduced to the point that you don't feel them uncomfortable. So they protect your ear. So constructively you could do that. But mainly would be for people that have some sleeping issues. Maybe they sleep in a noisy environment, or maybe there is like partner is a bit noisy, let's say, like snores a bit. And also for the day life, okay, let's say work in a co-working space, and it's a bit noisy. You can deal with that. But for some people, if you want to be a bit more isolated, you want to feel a bit more comfortable at the same time without having something that that hurts your ears, then you can use that. And then we have a third kind of like buyer persona. There is people that have noise sensitivity. Especially in the US, this issue is common everywhere. But there is more awareness in the United States and in Canada and the UK. Basically, there are people that have an issue with sound, with noise. Too much noise, it's not nice. If you remember when you were like in school, like second grade, I don't know, like at that time, there would be, of course, I mean, at least in my country, there would be for sure somebody that go into the blackboard doing something like that, and then you wouldn't feel comfortable. Yeah. Well, this kind of situation, it's for many people, it's a reality, okay. Even though they're not kids anymore. Yeah. It's like they're grown adults, and simply the noise is unbearable. Yeah. It's a condition. It's been studied in the United States, and there are many researches. So we talk to these people, and they say, look, you need to wear this stuff for a long time of the day, maybe for the whole day. And we came up with a solution that is comfortable and effective at the same time.
So if, for example, let's say one of the viewers, they like this whole idea of creating a product and then start marketing that and sell that. Mm. And hopefully that might be their way of exiting the office to get to a place like Bali. Mm-hmm. Sit in a fortunate condition like us where we can basically live on an island and enjoy the freedom that comes with it. Would you suggest that they should start off with like a product, for example, do something like drop shipping and test the waters? Or would you suggest that they start off by trying to create something new from the get-go?
Well, I don't have a lot of experience in drop shipping, but maybe it could be a good idea. There are two factors to consider. I started my own company with $10,000 in 2017, 18. And e-commerce was a completely different game. It's like you could start even with less money, you know? And you would have a lot of traction because there was so much demand and competition was very low. Nowadays, you need to compete on a higher level. It's like it's very, very difficult. You need much more money. So developing something from your own maybe depends on your capital, like on the resources and everything. But at the very beginning, maybe it's not the best start.
Okay, so it's better to test the waters in something that's like a little bit less risky and lower capital to put in up front, what you say?
I would do something like that. To be honest, I don't know, maybe because we are digital nomads. We've been moving around for a long time, even before COVID, before it was a thing. Like now it seems to be pretty common.
Yeah.
And I think when you start, you need to have like knowledge, capital, contacts, resources. So whatever you want to do, you can start from scratch, but maybe that's a bit more complicated because you're trying something, you don't know if it's gonna work. What I found personally, also I think my friends that I work with found very interesting, is that we've been working like in companies, very successful companies, and I was like in a Chinese very big company. And that's where you learn, actually. Yeah. It's like, you know, to be there like long time, not to spend there years. But I think if you want to start something that you really like, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe a good approach would be, let's learn from the best. Yeah. Let's work with them. Let's cooperate with somebody that's already doing it.
Yeah.
Because once you get an idea of the numbers, how they do it, and what they do concretely, then it's another game. It's much easier than starting from zero. Yeah. You can do it. Yeah. I've never done it. But that was my experience and it worked pretty okay for me, I guess. Yeah.
A lot of the books that I've done on business as well, most of them suggest that you actually, if you enter a new market, for example, let's say if I had to go back and start a short-term rental company all from scratch, it would have been best for me to actually go and look for work at the one place that is already doing it, like an existing company, and then just work like 6 months or so. And then as I exit, I already know exactly the systems that I have in place, the software they use, this and that. And that's why a lot of books actually suggest that. So if there's viewers that want to enter, maybe that's the way to try and get their foot into the door, to try and work at an existing company that's already doing it. Immediately you get the contacts of all the suppliers, you can see the shipping boxes, you can see the company that it came from, all of that. So that's definitely one way to enter, according to the books, and it obviously makes sense, a good way to get your foot into a door for something new. So
if I can add, like,
yes, of course.
I mean, it's not that you want to copy, but you want to learn a bit, like a business model, right? Yeah. Maybe you can even find out that it's not for you.
Exactly, yeah.
It's something like, okay, you know what? That I don't like because I've seen him doing it and I've seen the boss I will leave. Maybe it's not my lifestyle. Maybe you cannot do it remotely. Mm. Like a variety of reasons, but at least you get a feeling of what's going to be the future.
Yeah.
And it's okay, that's not for me. I move to something else. Like, oh, that's exactly what I want. And then like I can move forward in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. And then you didn't have any investment. Otherwise, you start something, then 6 months later, you realize it's not for you, as you said. And then you already have like all your capital in it, and it's better late to pull out then. So it's definitely best way to go about with that. If you had to start over, would you have done something different, or
That's a very good question. I think it's kind of philosophical because in the end, we are the results of what we do, the choices we made. And I'm pretty okay with what I've done before. I made a lot of mistakes in every possible field,
that's normal.
but you need to learn. I learned the hard way, but at least I learned. And if I would change anything, I don't think so. I'm okay with
That's
it.
good. Yeah, like in any business, if there's anyone sitting in the office want to start their journey of being an entrepreneur, it's destined that you're gonna make mistakes. Like
Yeah. Oh, it's
it's
part
that's
of the game.
normal. Losing money, making mistakes, that's completely normal. So
Yes.
if you start something and you want to jump into the one thing and something goes wrong, don't feel like it's you making a mistake. It's actually part of the whole learning process. It's
Yes.
destined to happen. I like to look at it at a way that I didn't make a mistake, I just learned something. So
Exactly.
that's,
I agree 100%. I think it's actually very healthy. I have some friends that back home in Italy, they're very cool guys, they have very good jobs, they're very high skilled, but that part is difficult to get. And I read a book, I think, I don't remember the title, but it was a very interesting book. And was connecting like how do you evaluate intelligence? Because the traditional definition of intelligence was quite just static. It was like, okay, you're born with this like IQ, you're born with these characteristics, deal with it, no? And it turns out that actually now they connect intelligence. I mean, they did many studies, they connect intelligence with experience. So that means that you need to go through certain experiences to learn. Maybe it takes a bit more time or a bit less, that's up to you, but if you experience something, some problems, and you face the issue and then you're able to solve or even not to solve, that is going to give you a lot, like very good lesson. But what is important is the reflection of experience, not just experience stuff randomly. You need to think it over. And that's actually very beneficial because it's part of the game, as you said. It's like you don't have to be afraid of it. So with money, you got to be careful because if you're limited from on your capital, and then you need to make, I think there is a saying, like fail fast, right? You want to fail fast before it's, so, all in, right?
Exactly. So I would also actually suggest for anyone, even if they have a lot of capital, don't budget or plan, okay, I'm going to start with this business and this business is going to take this much of my capital, because like be prepared for it not to work out. That should be part of the whole plan from the beginning. If it's not going to work out, how are you going to exit? Like the exit should be almost more planned out than the entering of the whole plan. So I would actually suggest start with lower capital, even if you have access to all of it. Start with a little bit and just do like proof of concept. And as soon as they see, yes, it is working, then you can go and put in more money and more time. But to touch on what you just said about the experience, I believe experience is way more important than any studies, or obviously, like reading books and those kind of studies is very important. But for example, I spoke to a girl once that is in business school. So she's literally studying business, and she was, I think, she was like 3rd year or 4th year of doing it, and she had no clue how to start a business. I'm just like, what do they teach you? Like, I haven't done any business school other than just books and experience. And like, for me, it's second nature just to start another business, just to build something like that's non-existent. So in that sense, they teach you, but I feel like they teach you how to be an employee in a business more than actually starting your own business. And that just defeats the purpose, in my opinion, because why do they teach you business if they're not really teaching you how to start a business? So,
It's I think it's like it's an issue, and in the end it's like it's a fun part of it, you know. It's like I don't come from a business background. I started philosophy, so it has nothing to do. Maybe in a way it has to do, because philosophy is about everything. It's about critical thinking, maybe. That's also helpful. But let's say that I come from the product development. That's my expertise in China.
Yeah.
Expertise, like, that's what I've been doing. So. Yeah. And so you need to go to the suppliers, the factories, and then like one day I read a book. It was very, very useful. I think it's called The Lean Startup. And I really recommend the book. And it gives you, it's the idea, the theory, the MVP, minimum viable product. It's like, how do you get something so basic that solves a problem? Yeah. And how do we test it? Nice. You want to test it as fast as possible, spending as little as possible. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, one thing is to go to university and learn about this stuff for 3-4 years. And have an exam at the end with a professor that gives you a score. Oh, I think it's much more fun that you read the book and try to apply it by yourself, you know, and doing it for real. And that's pretty cool. Yeah. It's tiring, can be stressing, but it's you get an idea and you need to test it, you know. It's much more fun, I guess.
So would you say that spending, for example, 4 years in college learning that, do you suggest that over, like, just jumping in with trying to build your own experience and learn from your mistakes and grow that way?
Well, I studied a lot at university, and I cannot say that I didn't like it. It's part of me. Mm. But if you want to do business, I think the sooner you start, the better. I don't think you need a degree for that. Yeah. Experience, as you said, I agree 100%, has much more value. If you get a degree, why not? Yeah. Like, I think everybody develops in a different way.
Mm.
But yeah, I think the idea that I need a degree in order to do that, I don't think that works. You don't need it. It's a false assumption.
Yeah, definitely. I would actually see, for example, the colleges being, for example, if they teach you about business, not just teach you about it, but like have physical assignments where from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, you have to start one business, for example. And then while you study, you also practice at the same time. Mm. And then next year, when you go for your second year, or whether it's from your second to your third, then you have the option of starting another or starting a new one, scrapping the old one, or even continuing with your existing one. And then the end of the year, you are like tested on the progress that you've made from the beginning of the year until the end, whether it's starting from scratch or building on an existing one. I think that would be like super cool and like actually put the what you're into action to practice that as well. I wish colleges could do that.
And that would be cool. Yeah.
But I guess at the end of the day, it's also the guys in the college, he can still do it. He's not going to get an assignment at the end of the year, but he can still start a business, learn by experience and being in college. And actually, if there's someone sitting in school or in college listening or watching this, I feel like I wish I knew now or then what I knew now, because you are surrounded by like hundreds of people. You know what they like. They, for example, let's say I was in grade 9 or grade 10. I know what toys we like as boys of that age, whether it's a rugby ball or whatever it is, and we can easily go, for example, I could have gone on some, as you would say, like a Chinese company and produce some kind of toy that would soothe, that would be something that I would enjoy playing with. And then I go to school with that toy. Everyone asks me, where did you get that toy? I'm like, hey, there's a shop online. It's my shop, but you can just buy it there. All of a sudden, you have literally free marketing. And the more of your friends start to play with their toy, the more other grade kids would want that. So it's actually so easy to put it out there in front of hundreds of people immediately. You don't have to spend a cent on marketing because everyone just sees it. And like, I feel like that's such a good opportunity. Now, obviously, we're older, not in school anymore, not in college. So we don't, obviously, we can sit here at a
different environment, I guess, no?
At a co-working space and have maybe a cool gadget to, like, almost like your laptop stand that you had. But I guess that's easily accessible for everyone. Maybe if you make something that's new that no one has seen yet, then
But there's even a different design, why not?
But yeah, you're only like limited to 20, 30, 40 people. Mm. Where in school and college, you're limited to hundreds, which is...
But I think you can start any kind of business. Mm. I mean, I went to play padel. If you're in Bali, you like padel, that's the place for you. I went to play padel and I met an Indian guy living in Australia.
Yeah.
And he was studying business, but in the meantime, he wanted to do it already. Like he was even a bit, he doubted his choice of going to university. Because it's like, I think I'm not actually learning. It was this feeling. But then he said, okay, anyway, I'm studying. I'm going to do that at least for 1 or 2 years. And then in the meanwhile, he started his own business. And what did he do? Something very basic. It's like he bought 3 scooters, three, and was renting them out to students. And then he would get the money back in something like 6 months.
Yes.
Or good. 1 year, I don't remember exactly. Yeah. But he said, like, that's the way I live here. That's where the money comes from, for my expenses.
That's good.
And it's something very basic. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, so simple, but...
I mean, in the end, like, you need a simple business, you know, to make it work. Yeah. And but once you start, like, because, you know, again, I studied philosophy. And for many years, math was something kind of, esoteric. Something I studied a lot of math, but it's difficult for me.
Yeah.
But once you start, like, playing with a number and see what happens next, it's a completely different experience than somebody teaching you, okay, that's how you gotta do it, you know?
Yeah.
And especially if you work for yourself, compared if you work for somebody else, the experience, the effort, I think, it's just different, you know? It's another level. But because we've been talking about university, if I can add something, it's because you say, okay, wait, we could design better business schools, right? Mm. And it's a very good idea. I think also that there is like an assumption that I don't like that much. It's okay, I'm not right, but
not yet.
I know, I must know. I think I'm pretty fine with that. Again, I studied philosophy 6 years. After 6 years, I didn't even know how I graduated, but I knew that, okay, that's not for me.
Mm.
I love philosophy. I love to have philosophical conversation, but teaching in that environment is not for me.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm saying is, like, you can design the best school ever, and this helps for sure. But I think what you need to check out, especially if you're young and in college, well, what's inside of you, what you really want in life, you know? And maybe if you're between 20 and 30, well, it's the time for you to do a lot of experiences. It's kind of a cliche, but I think it's true, you know? Definitely. You need to try that, you need to try other stuff.
Mm.
Maybe do your own business, fail miserably, but do it anyway, or be successful.
Yeah.
You're going to be also a bit lucky, but you need to try many things. Yeah. Also to realize what you want.
Yeah.
Because if you think, okay, I'm going to do that because the school is going to give me my way to top life, I don't think it's going to happen. It's like it always down to what you want and what you feel and what you experience as well, you know, the mindset. And it's something that you can get from the environment, but at the end of the day, it's your choice.
Yeah.
It's your body, it's your time, it's your life, you know. And there are many people that love to work in, you know, not even, maybe not an office. I think the conception of the office a bit, how do you say, it's a bad connotation nowadays, but not necessarily bad, but you can work like even in another kind of environment and have a stable job.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like you need to ask yourself, is this something that you really want? Because if you don't want it, well, you need to start looking somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want it, but you accept it. And then your life will change accordingly, you know?
Yeah. I was in an office job for maybe 2 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like shortly after school. I took one gap year and then I had an office job for 2 years. It was nice because I was like creative, so I had to like 3D animate things the whole time, like furniture and things like that for big hotels. So it was, I'm a creative person, so I like to make things.
Nice.
So even if it's just on a computer, I was digitally. I was
digitally.
Yes,
there's all right.
My tongue is looping on that. So I was still creating something and I enjoyed that, but at the same time, like, I was sitting the whole day and I just felt like I want to do something more. So that's when I then decided, okay, started to look at what options there is outside of the South Africa so that I can maybe do a job where I'm working overseas so that I get to see the world at the same time. That's then how I got into yachting. And then I loved yachting as well. It was just as nice. You get to see the world. You get paid to see the world.
But you were working like on a boat or something?
Yes, like on super yachts.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, so I was working from 35-meter yachts all the way up to 105 was the biggest yacht I've worked on. And that's for the billionaire. And that's one of the things that I liked. Like I get to, where's that 30 minutes? That's one of the things that I liked is I get to like sit in with the billionaire basically. You get sometimes get a little bit of a conversation with them. But one specific thing, there was a boat that I worked on in Barcelona. And like that owner, he's such a cool guy. Like he was literally most down to earth guy. You would, if you see walking in the street, you would never know.
Yeah.
And his kids as well, he's actually Australian. And his kids as well, like they are so down to earth, so like well-mannered. You would, a lot of those rich billionaires, some of their kids not always so well-mannered because they're not used to not getting what they want. And it's for them, it's something foreign. Like, why can't I that or something like that? They just don't understand. And these, like, even though I had to like go and pick them up from the airport, take them home, stupid example, but they, instead of saying like, hey, Daniel, please pick me up at the airport, they would like, hey, Daniel, would you mind picking me up? Even though I have to, I can't say no, but they still like still ask nicely. But I've learned so much just by watching them. And that's one of the reasons why I also liked yachting. It's, for example, like his two boys, the one was like 16, the one was 8 years old. And they both had a business already at that age, like, and it's a successful business doing good. And I'm like driving them.
Okay.
And then I listen to a 16-year-old guy on the phone, and it sounds like a 50-year-old businessman making like business discussions and things. So
That's like, very cool.
Yeah, and then
cool.
I have a chat with them, and then I learn some things there. Even though I was like 23 at that time, I think, and they're like 16 or 17.
Okay.
So in that sense, it was very cool. And like, there's so much that I actually learned from those like millionaires and billionaires, and a lot of things that I want to implement in my own life. Like, for example, the kids, I want my kids also to be down to earth. I don't want them to be spoiled or anything. But that's also one thing that I liked about yachting. But the thing that took me out of yachting was I was like in COVID, when COVID hit, I realized like even a stable job is not always stable, because when COVID hit, I was stuck in South Africa and they said, okay, they're not going to pay me, which I in a way understand. But for example, my dad had a business and he has such a good heart. He was still like paying his employees even though they weren't working, because obviously they need food on the table, they need to support their own families and stuff. So my dad was supporting me, but then I realized like a stable job is not always as stable as you think, and it's better to have the control in my own hands. And that's when I started to think, okay, maybe I should rather start my own business or start thinking in that way. And that's basically where my whole entrepreneurial journey started. I would say that was the seed that planted it, made me want to do something outside and not be tied to a job. And then I obviously started slowly but surely building. 4 years later, I was able to quit my job, and now I'm sitting in Bali.
That's very cool.
What would you say was your turning point? Like from the point where you, or was it in college, you always knew like you want to start something?
I think like I have a kind of different story for myself, because I think I had a turning point during COVID, and I'm 36, so I was 4 years ago was already more than 30. I started my first business when I was 28, I think, but I've been living my life chapter by chapter. I was in Italy, there was like the philosophy chapter, and was the Mexican chapter. I lived in Mexico for a while. Then there was the Chinese chapter, study Chinese language chapter, and then going to university chapter again to study more, and then trying to do a business. The first business I did was still on Amazon, but the idea, I didn't even understand how to make money. My idea was just to be independent. Okay. For me, it was important to be independent.
Yeah.
So I didn't have clear ideas. That's what they usually talk to younger people sometimes. I would recommend that. Try to clear your ideas about what you want. So for me, the turning point, I would say, was around during COVID. I was forced to stay at home. And in a way, it was nice because I was very close to my parents that had been living abroad for many years. So it was actually a good way to catch up, let's say. But still, you cannot go out. You don't have a lot of freedom. And then I started thinking, reading a bit more, and then I realized, okay, maybe it's time for me to start like writing down what I really want, what I want to get. And at a certain point, it was not like an epiphany. I think that's the word in English. Okay, it was like that they understood everything. It was a gradual process. And if I can give a suggestion to the people who are watching, especially the younger one, there is an exercise that I really like and that I did, and it was very inspiring. Basically, maybe you heard it from a movie, but it's not something like you hear in a movie, actually. Yeah. It's like you take a paper, you use your hand, no, use like a computer or your phone, take a real pen as you did right now, and then try to imagine, the better word is to visualize yourself in 10 years. But don't write things like in a movie, but try to literally describe when you wake up, you open your eyes, and you tell me what you see. And then you see there's a window, and then the window you see there is a mountain, but still you can see the sea. That was what I saw, because I wanted to be in a countryside area, not far from the city, but still if I want to enjoy the nature, I have like both the mountain and the sea. I really like that. So, yes, for me, it's exactly like Bali. The only difference, like for me, I like to ski a bit. So if I get the winter here, it would be better. Yeah. But just an example. But yeah, you get me. Like, and then if I got my blankets are like white, the room is very small, it's big, it's cold, it's hot. Nice. I have a beautiful wife, a beautiful partner, I have dogs. Depends on what you want, exactly. Yeah. You know? But you need to vary it down like an ordinary day. And then you go through the day, what you want to work, if you want a team, if you want to work by yourself, if you want to work in an institution. You write down what you really like. And even if you don't realize it, writing it down, it doesn't matter if that paper, what you state, is going to change or not. It's the first raw data. They can change later. But once you write it down, you realize, okay, that's what I want. How do I get there? Because to be honest, if you want to have an international lifestyle that looks so cool, but if you're not in your hometown and you're in another country, let's say that you get married with a girl or like a boy, like a partner from somewhere else, and then just that look sounds pretty cool, actually, just that implies more money. Because if you have one, two kids, flight tickets are not that cheap, you know? Yeah. And one thing is to have like your grandparents 10 minutes by car or like 10 hours flight. Yeah. It's a completely different thing. So it's just like, okay, if I want to have that, if I like this kind of business, if I like this kind of job, this kind of place to live, and then there are certain things you gotta do to get there, you know? Yeah. Of course, it's just a direction. And but if you like this direction and then in life you're doing that, you realize that, okay, that's not the right direction for me. And that was my turning point. Okay. Starting writing down this stuff, even the idea that the exercise of writing down with your hand makes them kind of not real, but there.
Yeah.
It's an object there. Yeah. And that from that point, I started changing to realize, okay, I want to do a business. I want to do it again. I want to do it differently. I want to make more money. And then I want to get that. That's the way I want to develop. Yeah. What's important for me, your values, et cetera, et cetera. And I did that when I was 20, no, I was 32.
Nice.
I suggest if you do that a bit earlier, I think it's much better to have a conversation with yourself, let's say.
But I guess not a lot of people, like they don't always think in that new mindset. So some people might only reach like 50. And now all of a sudden they realize like, hey, I should have done something better, something more with my life a long time ago. But it's never too late, though. They still have who knows how long in their life, so they can always still make a turning point. It's never too late. I think a lot of people actually suppress themselves by thinking it's too late. So even if they only have 20 years left, let's say they reach 70 or they're 60 and they will reach 80, it's still worth it. I spoke to a guy once in my hometown, Langebaan. I was kite surfing and I was like inflating my kite and I saw an old guy. I guess he was probably late 70s, early 80s.
All right.
Like old guy, and he came up with his kite. I'm like, yes, you like that. That's how I want to be one day.
Yeah.
And like as and he's fit.
All right.
Obviously, he has an old body, but you can see he's not like unhealthy or anything. And he's like inflating his kite. And maybe halfway through, I just knew I have to go speak to him. So I just went up to him and I told him, like, hey, I just have to tell you I admire how you're still so active and doing kite surfing. You must love it if you're still doing it. And he's like, no, I'm starting to learn now. And my mind just exploded. You're like, he told me how old he is, but I can't remember. And I said, like, you're like 78 or whatever. And you're only starting to learn. And kitesurfing is not an easy sport to learn. It takes a lot of time and you fall a lot of times. It's difficult to learn to do. And he's like going into it, starting to learn now. And I was just so amazed. And he told me that all of his, like his mother, his father, they all reached like in their 90s, almost close to 100 years old before they passed away. So he believes that you die the moment you stop living. And that word still stick to me today. So he says he's never going to stop living, then he will never die. And that's so true, because the moment when you accept, okay, I'm old now. Now I'm just going to stay at home, not do anything. That's the moment when your body actually goes backwards more and more, because it feels like it doesn't need to be as strong anymore. You don't use your muscles as often. So why have all these energy wasted on building all these muscles if you're actually not even going to use it? Now your whole body starts to go backwards. And long story short, I was just so amazed. And I learned that moment. This was when I was like doing that 3D animation.
All right.
And this was probably 7 years or 8 years ago. And until today, and probably when I'm 70, I'll still remember that guy. I wish I have his contact details or something to give him some more praise, because he definitely deserved that. But those words and that inspiration, I'll always remember.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, if you... Let's say that you like kiting and you find out that it's the best thing in the world for you. I think you can start anytime. I agree with that. Imagine that you found out that earlier.
Yeah.
And if you found out there, it's much better. That's, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, yeah, like you can start anytime, but the sooner the better.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's difficult to find what you really like or want. So it takes time. So
sometimes you think you like something and you try it and then... After 2 years, you know, but over it, that also happens. Do you know Casey Neistat?
No, I don't know.
He's a very popular YouTuber, but he's in New York, but his wife is South African, so he goes to Cape Town often as well. But he gets like millions and millions of views every single video he uploads. So he's massive. But he once said, because he's maybe in his 30s now, so he's still fairly young. And he once made a whole video about the fact that his wife's dad that gave him this advice. Because his wife's dad, if I remember correctly, is like retired, but he's older. So he told Casey to rather work hard and then retire when he's old. Rather work, for example, 4 years and then take 1 year of like holiday. And then the money that you would have saved up for your retirement, you now use in that 1 year. And then you work another 4 years. And that way, he's able to like enjoy retirement while being young.
Okay.
So you're not waiting until you're 70 or 60 years old. Now you can't do the fun things with your family anymore because your body is not always as strong as it was when you were younger. Yeah, this is just an example of how... one way of looking at enjoying that freedom. But I would say the most ideal situation will be to find a way to be able to retire young and then enjoy the rest of your life. For example, like, I believe a lot of people here in Bali are able to turn the thing that they are doing and try and automate that, like semi like the conversation we had yesterday. Mm-hmm. You can turn anything into a way to automate it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that business are then running itself and you're earning money every month without technically having to work on it, how is that difference from retirement?
Yeah.
So if you're able to do that at a young age, but if you have a full-time job, that's very difficult to do. Mm. But when you have a business, that's easy to do with some experience.
Mm. I mean, yeah, in the end, I think it doesn't matter what kind of business you do. You want to get to a certain point of automation.
Mm.
It could be with people, with tools. Now everybody's talking about Zapier. Mm. I need to get into it because I haven't studied yet enough. Yeah, but you need to get a system that works without you.
Yeah.
And it's also like, after you get that, still it boils down to what you want, but if you want to get bigger, it's also like a condition sine qua non. It's like, I don't know if it's in English, you can say that. Like, it's you need that anyway. Because if you cannot, if you need to understand every single part of the business, I think, but once you understand that, you need to start delegating, automating. So you still understand the parts, but you need somebody that does it for you.
Yeah.
So you can focus on something else. That could be kiting or like making the business grow or like do another business or whatever.
Yeah.
But you need that at a certain point.
Yeah.
I met, was in Italy, they were talking about, some friends told me, there was a very successful guy that had a truck business.
Mm.
Like, he was moving goods all through Italy with trucks. He started from scratch. He created something very, very big. But he was not able to out of the business.
Yeah.
He was still, after 20 years, taking care of small details.
Yeah.
And he told me that once there was a car accident with the truck 4 hours from his place, 2 o'clock in the morning, he woke up and he went there. He didn't have a system that allowed him to avoid this kind, to deal with this kind of emergency.
Sure.
So you have a very successful business, but you cannot get out of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, I want to get to the point that you also enjoy it, you know, and you have people, a team. I think it's very cool to have a team at a certain point and to work with, and then they know how to do it, and you grow together.
Yeah.
I think it's also important that.
I've heard a very successful guy said once that there's 3 stages of a business. One, you physically have to start it and do everything about it. And a lot of people, they stop after that first step. Like, they only do that one step and they think like they are satisfied with that and they just continue for the rest of their life with that. But there's 2 more steps that only the successful people or like super successful people know about and actually implement. And I've been trying, but it's difficult, especially the last one. The first one is, as we now said, like, you have to, the business should be able to continue to make money by itself. So you should be able to step out, just disappear out of nowhere for no reason, and the business should still be able to function as usual.
Okay,
but
makes sense.
Then there's step 3, where if you step out now, the business should still be able to grow without you. And that's the difficult part. Like, it's one thing to let the business run without you, but it's something else to let it grow without you. And that's something that I'm struggling with in the short-term rental business, because I've tried to like teach people how to get more properties on board, but I understand that no one will be able to do it as well as I do. And that's something you should accept in a business and then allow other people to do it, even though they can only do it 80% as well as you. It's always better to get them on board. You can maybe get 2 people and then it's 160%, I guess. But it's definitely hard to try and get those people to do it in that sense.
It's a very nice idea. Never heard about it, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
very interesting.
Definitely. That was also a good way of thinking of it, because a lot of people, especially the smaller businesses, you, like a local business, unfortunately, the shop owner will always work in his own shop.
Mm.
So he's never really going to expand or think about, okay, how can I step out of the shop and let it run itself?
Mm.
And I feel like the moment when you do that, it's actually automatic how you're going to want to let it grow not necessarily by itself, but you will sit at home and be like, I'm so bored now. What do I do now that somebody else is in my business running it? Now you start to think, okay, let's get another business. Let's double that one, get another one, and you get somebody else to run that one. So immediately from your boredness, you start to expand and grow the one existing business. And that wouldn't have been possible if you were sitting in the business working the whole time, which I
That's
guess,
very cool. Yeah, it makes sense. Interesting.
I guess when after you've mastered that, now you need to figure out how to get somebody else to grow the business for
Yeah,
you, and then you can
it's very
completely
tricky,
step
I
out.
guess.
Yeah, that's difficult.
I'm assuming, because it's something new concept, but it makes sense. I'm assuming that the second and third step, it's also important how you deal with people, how you cooperate with people, how to motivate them,
Definitely.
and also understand what they want. And
Yeah.
so, because you know, my experience, I'm at the point that I don't have a team yet. I think if the business is good, we're launching next month.
Nice.
Let's see what happens. We're gonna validate the product inside Amazon and
Nice.
see, get real feedback from people.
Yeah.
Let's say that it works and we get the data we want. We're gonna grow little by little, sustainably, bootstrapping. At a certain point, we want to hire people, as
Nice.
we want to get to that point.
Yeah.
If that happens, like I think it's important to figure out how to have these kind of details and make a system, a formula that allows you to have people really involved in the project. And I'm in the team, in the Chinese team, and that works very well. So like try to motivate and try to always connect what you do, the results, with your work, with the value. And sometimes a bit difficult, because it's everybody does something different, but this kind of connection, like what you do is related to the performance, to the results, seems to be useful, important. And I hope to get to the point that I have this kind of problems, meaning that the business has been growing. So it's I think it's at a certain point you need a team
Yeah,
anyway.
definitely. One of the biggest things is you need to accept that people are not going to be able to do it as well as you. That's something that a lot of books has told me, especially, and I want to share this with the viewers. If anyone has a business and they want it to grow and expand, a lot of the things that people fall for is they feel like nobody can do it as well as I can, so they never get somebody to fill that role. And obviously, it's true. No one's going to work as hard on your business if it's not their own business. If it's just a job for them, they're not going to work as hard as you would working on your own business. But at the end of the day, it's something that has to happen, and you have to accept that it's not going to be as well. So, next month, as you said, your product is coming out. If there's viewers that want to have a look at it or buy or whatever, where can they find that?
If you're from the US and you have an Amazon account, we're going to start with Amazon. And
Nice.
later, again, if we validate the product, that means if the people like what we created, if you want to tell you a bit more about that as well, then in that case, we're going to have like a platform on Shopify. You can find us typing soft bliss, like software, and blissful, like soft bliss, earplugs. And you should find us, hopefully you're gonna find us on Amazon.com. We're gonna start from there. It's the biggest
Nice.
market.
Yeah.
And it's a project I really care about,
Nice.
and because it's yours. It's I ran a business for a while before. I didn't know much about it. I just went with the flow trying to do something. Now
Nice.
it's like after years of studying and having clear what our goals are, it's a different thing. But we wanted to start from the product, and it's something that many people see marketing, something, get a product and talk about it to everybody. And we still think that the best marketing is the product itself. So, especially if you want to do e-commerce, and nowadays, with all this competition, international competition from everywhere, I'm not just talking about Chinese or American, there's the Pakistani guys that do a lot of that. Everywhere, all the world is doing access to these marketplaces. So we need to, I think what's important, to come up with an advantage. Something that is difficult to copy, something that it's kind of unique and people like. And if you want to get into product development, I suggest you to read, actually to watch some videos on YouTube about the job to be done. your productivity will be higher to do a job. Maybe you're familiar with that. And it's a very cool theory. So last year in China, we've been developing this product. We developed our own shape, but we started from the customers, from the pain points. And I have some sleeping issues sometimes, and my business partner has this noise sensitivity. So we've been struggling with these things for many years, for earplugs. We've been using earplugs for many years. To be honest, my partner has been using them much more than me, but I use them as well. So we kind of like, we have to understand what people have, to, have been through in this niche. So we came up with our own solution, and then we tested with the early adopters, with people in the United States and Canada that have been using the competitors for long periods of time. And what do you want to get to know if your product is good enough to start actually making it and producing is to get the switch. It's like we contacted these people through Facebook ads, and we wanted to get the people that were actually in this niche that you've been using the competitors. And then say, look, we want to try our product. It's for free, free for us.
Yeah.
Not with a customer. That's the only thing that maybe conflicts with the theory, the MVP theory. But you want to see if they actually start using your product, your prototype, instead of the competitors.
Yeah.
And our idea is that half of the people we ship the product didn't reply to our service. So half of them didn't, these are the numbers, I'm not making, half of them like didn't reply at all. But the other half of them, 90% told us, I'm just using you guys, I don't use the competitors anymore.
Nice.
This is the kind of data that is, again, is not real validation. The real validation is when your product is on the market. But this kind of data is the base, in my opinion, is the base for something extra, for something, okay, we got something going on here.
Yeah.
Maybe we got some value here. Let's go further. But if you don't get to that point, I don't think you should start, like, you need to go slowly, you know? Because anyway, if you want to make, I don't know, soap or a lotion or like a book or whatever, the world crowded with products nowadays. Yeah. 10 years ago online, you couldn't find much. Nowadays, there are too many products.
Yeah.
So unless you can stand out, unless you can make something that people say like, wow. Otherwise, like you need to think about it carefully. That's our experience in e-commerce. Again, it's a bit different than like local businesses or like other stuff. It's not a software, it's a physical thing. It took us 1 year to develop, to test it until we get it right.
Nice.
But if you don't get to that part, I think it's that's something you want to think about it a bit more. Yeah. That's my experience. Like, I think it's important to share because that's my.
Definitely.
Don't be because like you can do anything you want. You can start from little.
Yeah.
We want to be. We are very ambitious. Let's say, and then we want to get to that point. But again, if you can, the idea is that what is my, you want to do? I agree with the Seth Godin, the American guru, very very cool guy. What is marketing? He asks, and then he says, okay, marketing is to bring change to a certain amount of people, to your people.
Yeah,
it's not about selling something. That's part of the game. But you want to help somebody that has a problem.
Yeah.
How can I make his life better? How can I change his life?
Yeah.
That's the way I think you gotta see it. I think it's also very ethical, you know, because sometimes people just say, I want to make money and stuff. But I think if you put yourself in the shoes of somebody that is helping other people, this also, I think, very motivates you on a different level. You
definitely. I believe in marketing in general as well. You have to, if you want to, like, for example, advertise this pen, you don't say, like, buy this pen because the pen is a good pen. You say, like, you can write down amazing things with this pen. You say what impact it will have on the customer instead of saying what its capabilities is.
Yes.
Because that's, I feel like then it's more about helping the customer, as you just said now, more than trying to like help the business, trying to sell more products. It's not the way to advertise, it's trying to help the customer.
Sure.
So if there's anything, where would you like customers to be able to, or customers, you know,
potential customers.
Like viewers or listeners. Where can they reach you? Do you want them to follow you on some social media?
Yes, I think we can share the LinkedIn, my LinkedIn. I don't use them much, but if you text me, I'm going to reply you within 24 hours. Usually that's my time.
Nice.
I also have Instagram that I don't use much, but I reply there. I don't put pictures, but why not? You can find me there.
And I will leave all the links down below. Yes. So that will be in the description. So thank you.
Thank you much
for joining in the podcast, and thank you for the pro tips. Right. I'm sure they've learned a lot. I've learned a lot.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Until next episode, hopefully one day you'll join us again.
Sure, let's see.
And then we can find out how the product went.
Yes, yes.
The difficulties you had with it, the things that you learned from it, what you liked about it, how it turned out, and all of that.
Sure, sure.
That'll be interesting for the viewers and listeners.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
By all means.
Cool. Thank you.
Right.